A man is in the hospital. He's frightened. He's unsure. And he doesn't know what's going to happen today, let alone tomorrow. His family and his friends have gathered around. They sip their coffee. They talk about what will happen when he comes home. They chat amicably about the happenings at church, the state of the economy, the numbers of life-sustaining beeping gadgets to which the man is attached. They move around, fussing over the position of the pillows and the angle of the bed, adjusting the flowers in their vases and changing the setting of the blinds in the room so as to let in the rays of the setting sun. They love the man, this ever-changing assembly of friends and family members. They love him, and so they do whatever they can. They come and they go, laughing, remembering, departing, as the fear and the uncertainty linger. And all the while, they do not know or cannot speak the question that so desperately needs to be asked. No one dares, lest they ruin the mood or because they do not know how, to say that this moment is both holy and terrible. Nobody dares to ask the simple question, could we say a prayer before I leave? And so they go. And the frightened man remains frightened, because nobody wanted to offend. And the spiritual thirst of the moment goes unquenched. And perhaps because of this, when all his friends have gone, he has to pray alone late at night the truest words he knows to say. Dear God, whoever you are, give me strength and give them strength. And thank you for today and hold me until tomorrow. These moments, these pieces of time full of spiritual hunger and spiritual need slip away into the backgrounds of our lives, and they can never be retrieved. To us, the spiritual significance of a given moment, may it be a joy or a sorrow, may it be even Sunday morning, the spiritual significance of any moment is too often like the elephant in the room. We all know it's there. We're sort of nervous about what exactly it's going to do to us, and we're certainly too polite to point it out. And so we go on. We go on for moments, hours, days, needing somehow to break the silence of our aching hearts and wondering how to find the courage to do so. This was the image in my head when I started to plan out this fall sermon series about spiritual risk-taking. This image of a holy moment, of a people so in need, of a silence that trumps even our great desire to name the holy. It is the image to me of a spiritual need unmet, a need answered only by silence, of a secret left unspoken that begs to be brought into the light of day. The secret is that we are spiritual beings living in the very midst of spiritual moments, and that we are all in need of spiritual courage. This image took on, of course, a particular poignancy this week as our friend Larry Underwood fought as he continues to fight for his life. Blessedly, Larry hangs on, and Larry fights on, but things are scary, and he can't usually respond to much of anything, let alone know for certain that we're there with him. But I tell you one of the very few things that Larry has responded to this week with noticeable comprehension were the rare moments when his friends prayed with him. I know that those prayers mattered. They mattered to all of us, And on whatever level he could comprehend them, they mattered and matter still to Larry. And yet, how often, even prayers as necessary as those go unspoken. How often we walk away from sacred space without daring to name it so. When I imagine a hospital room full of every possible thing but prayer, it's hard for my heart not to ache. Even I, who am so often the designated spiritual person, have left a few hospital rooms, family bedsides, and hallway conversations without taking the spiritual risk of naming the inherent holiness in a sliver of time. Even I have missed the chance to see the holy and to name it so. After all, into a quiet room to break the conviviality of the moment is to intrude upon it with nothing less dramatic than a tear in the veil that separates the sacred from the mundane. And yet that tear exists. It has always existed. The sacred and the mundane stack up against one another in every nook and cranny of our lives. We're just not used to saying so. And in moments as sacred as Larry's fight, it is up to us to find a way to speak the truth. The holy crowds in on us. Only the courageous dare to name it. This summer at General Assembly, one of my colleagues, the Reverend Christine Robinson, gave a talk to all of us ministers to inspire us to do our jobs well and fulfill our callings, and she talked to us about taking spiritual risks. She said that taking spiritual risks is one of the primary tasks of ministry, and she's right. She says, the minister whose most important, most sacred job is bringing the light of the holy into the pasture, coaxing the people out of their rational heads, helping them to understand their hurt, express their gratitude, put words to their prayers, even the ones they don't think they can say. What does it take to do that work? What does it take? Seems like I ought to know. I can tell you that it does not take a theological degree or a regular gig preaching sermons. What it does take, without a doubt, is courage. The courage to put words to what we thought we couldn't say. The courage to talk about the hunger of our souls instead of talking around it. The courage to never let a sacred moment like that one around the hospital bed slip by unheeded. And so this fall, I'm going to try to talk about spiritual risks we sometimes avoid. Beginning today with that great big whopper of a risk, faith, and moving on to other equally risky issues, like the mercy that calls us to do more than forgive. Like humility that is something quite beyond self-criticism. Like truth-telling that doesn't flinch at the risk of loving honesty. In this sermon series, I hope my efforts will help us all ask and re-ask questions that are of the utmost importance and lie far beyond whatever metaphors I might throw out at us. When did you have to do a spiritually courageous thing? When did you keep a holy moment from slipping away unnoticed? When did you peek behind the curtain that separates the sacred from the mundane? And could you ever look at the world the same way again? Taking a spiritual risk is no small thing. And today's topic is one of the most anxiety-ridden and life-giving risks of all. Faith. A word which has so often been defined so narrowly that many among us are proud to think we have none of it. a word that has been used to separate the chosen from the unwashed, the faithless from the faithful, for so long that it's hard to imagine it any other way. The word faith comes not from orthodox creeds or specific doctrines, but initially and originally from the Latin word fidere, which means to trust, or to confide in, to trust. Not to believe this or that, but to trust. And trust is a riskier endeavor any day than simple belief ever could be. To have faith is to trust, and trusting in anyone or anything is a risky endeavor indeed. But we do trust in something larger or at least different than ourselves. We trust enough to believe that the floor will be there to catch us when we set our feet upon it in the morning. We trust enough to try to keep being in honest relationship with each other. We trust, even if it's only our instincts guiding us, and even if we think it is not related to God at all, we trust. And thus, on the simplest level, we have faith. The greater risk, the risk I want to challenge us to today, is to speak boldly of what it is we place our trust in. To speak of what we have faith in, and to never be so afraid or so polite as to remain silent. Again, from my colleague Christine Robinson, our faith, our thinking about our faith, our conversations with others about faith do not do well with belligerent language, close questioning, and scorn. Very few people are willing to talk about their spiritual lives if they think they will be ridiculed or misunderstood. If I think you are going to laugh at me, ridicule me, or prove me wrong, I'm not going to say that when the congregation really gets to singing and clapping with the musicians, that's when I feel the Spirit move in this room. I'm not going to tell you about that one precious time when I was scraping the bottom of my barrel and I felt for an infinitely sweet half hour held in the palm of God's hand, and that sometimes my longing for a repeat of that amazing few moments is so strong I could weep. Nope, I'm not going to tell you that. You'll just laugh at me. And since I really couldn't bear that, I'm just going to shut up and wait. If I don't wander away for someone to imagine a place where it's safe to speak about my tender, precious spiritual life. What Reverend Robinson is getting at here is that naming one's faith, or even daring to speak of it at all, requires having faith in the first place. Speaking of faith requires having faith in one another, faith that you won't be ridiculed, faith that your very lack of answers won't be picked apart, debated, or belittled, faith that your spiritual truth will be met with generosity on the part of others. To even speak of it is a risk. And it is here in community that we are called to take just such risks and to have enough faith in one another to make it possible. Without that, we effectively ignore the sacred every time it rears its head, and walk away from that hospital bed every time we need to speak, and play a game of silent pretending in holy moments when all we really want to do is speak the truth. To be a people of faith is first and foremost to be a people of trust. Trust in one another, certainly, and trust in something beyond ourselves, which some may choose to call God and others may never name at all. Trust in life, that it has meaning worth fighting for. Trust, as Frederick Buechner said in today's reading, that the madness and the lostness we see all around us and within us are not the last truth about this world, but only the next to last truth. Trust that the next to last truth isn't the only reality, that this whole great mess of complications we call life has a meaning beyond just simply making it to the end of the day. Trust is the measure of our faith, and it is perhaps the greatest risk of all. When I think of what we try to do, both as a congregation and as a people who work outside of these doors, I cannot ignore the tremendous faith that is asked of each of us. To show up here every Sunday and in all the things that bring us together between Sundays and dare to be honest together, dare to disagree in love, dare to speak the truth, is a tremendous trust. To dare even to be angry with one another and come back to the table, such faith is asked. If we cannot have some basic faith that what we do matters in the world, that change is possible, that hungry people might be fed, there is no impetus for us to do the social justice work we do, or even to offer simple charity. Without some measure of faith, there is only a cold spot where there ought to be the source of compassion. On October 5th, there will be a gathering of 2,000 people from across Northern Virginia for the public launch of Voice, Virginians Organizing for Interfaith Community Engagement. Brew has been at the ground level of Voice since its very inception, before it ever had a name, before we had any issues to talk about, before there were hardly any other congregations that joined us in the effort. We have gathered over these last 3 years with 40-something other congregations because we believed that together, with other people of faith, we could change the political structures of our county just enough to make a difference in some people's lives. We didn't know at the beginning if the folks at First Baptist up the road would look down on us with scorn for our obvious theological liberalism. We didn't know if the people at All Saints Catholic Church would work with us at all or not. We didn't know if the local Jewish temple would really stand together with the new mosque in town, or if evangelical and progressive clergy could really provide leadership on the same level in the same organization. But we had faith that it could happen. We trusted each other enough to come together again and again and again until 3 years later we were ready to launch this thing. On October 5th, there'll be this huge rally, and I hope a lot of you can come. Very few of us who will be gathered in that place believe anything close to the same thing. But we will share on that day one faith, one trust, a trust that we share every time we dare to try to do church together, the trust that people are capable of putting aside their differences long enough to work for something larger than themselves. On that day, I think that we will see with that gathering of 2,000, the risk of faith will be rewarded again and again and again. In working together, we allow for the possibility that we might all be better together, in spite of our differences, than we could be alone. In trusting one another, we have faith that there is something beyond the next to last truth of our disputes and our differences. Having faith, I think, comes down to having the courage to see more than this world's brokenness. It means having the courage to name that which breaks your heart and that which makes it sin. Trusting yourself and the universe enough to believe that we can do more than get through the day. I do believe that trust and faith involve the great risk of heartbreak. Surely we may trust and have that trust broken 1,000 times. Surely we may have faith and have that faith wither beneath us in a time of great need. But the only other option is to deny that we have faith at all to let the Holy slip through our fingers and to tell a lie of omission about the great truth that holds us all. The fact that there are sacred moments pulsing always underneath everything we think is so mundane. Sacred moments where our faith is made manifest if only we have the courage to speak its name. Faith, a great risk. May we have the courage to speak of it together. Amen.